listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
You are. I am. I've always wanted to meet you.
Yeah, well, nice to meet you.
And you look great in person as
well.
On the radio.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't turn the mics up. I apologize for that. Did you notice that?
I did.
Do you think anyone caught it?
I was going to say something, but then I didn't want to speak too soon.
I have one responsibility, and it's to slide these four things, these four toggles up, and I botched it.
There you go.
I'm not. Really,
you're now starting off
technical.
On a good foot here.
We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit www.breakdownexpress.com.
And our thanks also goes out to performingartslive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. Performingartslive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region.
And in studio with us today, we have two distinguished stars of stage and screen, J.D. Cullum from, I got to practice this, but...
Come see us.
Antaeus.
Well,
LA's
done.
Classical theater company and winner of the Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle Award for Outstanding Season for 2010. Mr. Cullum is getting ready to open in John Marston's rarely produced masterpiece, The Malcontent, at the Antaeus Theater in North Hollywood. Welcome, J.D.
Thank you.
Welcome, J.D.
Hey, yeah. Wow. It's a big crowd.
Follow us around.
If only you knew. We also have with us Paul Tony Award nominee, Mr. John Tartaglia, who has just opened in an important and very provocative work that I happened to see over this weekend past, The Temperamentals, from playwright John Moranz at the Blank Theater Company's Second Stage Theater in Hollywood.
Welcome, John.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh.
We try to spread that
around. It's a lot of them, and they stop at the same
exact time. Yes,
how do they do that?
They're so well trained.
They're like seals.
Yes.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah. Yes.
For lack of
Arr. Oh, that's funny. So we have there are two guests here with us today.
We do.
It's going to be a little confusing because we have a JD and a John.
Mm.
So if I refer to you,
out.
Does the J stand for John?
Yes, it does.
Oh,
John
no.
David. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we can't go there.
No, no.
John D and John T used to be really.
Because your name at various stages was John David.
Yes,
and
it
then
was.
It was John, and then it was.
Yes, started
JD.
Out John, then it was John David, then it was JD with periods, now it's JD sans periods.
So well, you are theatrical.
Sans. Thank you very much.
Sans periods. That's menopause, isn't it? I'm sorry.
Good. Well,
sorry. Oh, good thing we're on the internet.
So Paul,
before we talk to our guest, Michael, how was your week?
It was a good week.
Yes?
A good week, yeah. We had a great show at the Supper Club last night. I have a Supper Club, gentlemen, that's...
Do you? What's it called?
I do. It's called Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's in lovely Studio City.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
In the Tahunga Village.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's the number one club, nightclub in town dedicated to presenting the best of Broadway performers, such as yourself.
Very cool.
In concert.
Hmm.
And nightclub artists dedicated musically to the Great American Songbook, in that case. And
John, that's a thinly veiled attempt to get you to perform at the club, just so you know.
He pointed right at me when he said I thought,
Sterling, subtle like a freight train.
I'll take that as an invitation.
Please do. Please
Thank you.
Do.
I will.
And we've been there coming up on 5 years. So it was a fabulous show last night. And I'm excited because next week we have no show because it's April 24th. It's Easter. And so we get a day off. Nice. And then
we're
we'll
excited that you have no show.
I'm excited that
you could do a whole Easter pageant. I've always thought musical Stations of the Cross are really something that we play very well.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Hey,
really?
Hey. I have a joke about that. I have a joke about three Italians talking about the meaning of Easter. Would you like to hear it?
I'd love to hear it.
I'll have to be quick about it. I'm Italian, so, and I know I have a paisan here.
Yeah.
So three Italians are talking about the meaning of Easter, and the first Italian goes, "Oh, Easter, she's when you get a big three, and Papa Natale comes down the chimney." He goes, "No, Easter, that's Christmas." Easter, she's a win. You get a turkey, you put it on your table, you know, oh, you stunass, it's Thanksgiving. I tell you what Easter is. You see, they nail a Christ to the cross. And they put him in a cave, they roll a big rock in front. 3 days later, they come back, the rock's rolled away, Christ comes out, and if he doesn't see his shadow, we got 4 more weeks to work. That's my joke. I did that in about 40 seconds.
That was good.
That
huh?
was good. You huh? didn't use with up too much time on that one.
Yeah, with
well,
the
60-second joke
good
in 40
thing.
Seconds.
Good thing.
Very
it was,
nice.
And it was sans laughs.
That's right.
So you saw your first episode of Hoarders, you told
Hoarders.
Me? Just
I
a completely, you like that segue?
Complete accident, Paul.
Flipping around?
Complete, yeah, complete yeah. accident. You know how you do that,
yeah.
right?
And you've never seen it.
On the 900 channels that we now have on television.
Wow.
And I chose that channel. I stopped because of this imagery. You know, it was like so.
Was it just like one
what?
Of those bedrooms packed in magazines?
Yes. It was a very normal looking woman, like somebody's mom. It was somebody's mom in the episode, actually. And the daughter is just shaking her head, and I can't believe, mom.
Yeah.
and trying to get through the pathways in the house.
Right.
Which is so scary, like in a fire
very
or something.
Very scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then saying the daughter getting so agitated as she was, you know, visiting through
the labyrinth.
Yeah, yeah. That she said, you know what? I'm over it. I'm done. You are not allowed in my home ever again.
Wow.
And I'm never coming here unless you clean your act up. And she said, like, starting with something like this, and the daughter picked up something. Mm. And the woman went nuts. Put that back.
That's
put
my
that
dead
back.
Rat. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a dead cat. There was one where they discovered a dead cat. Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Underneath something, there was a dead cat.
There's Fluffy.
Cat. That's where Petunia is.
See, this is the thing, though. This is the thing that I saw a couple of episodes of Hoarders. I don't watch it because I'm cultured. But I saw one episode where they had to take their child into to speak to a therapist because the speech pattern, the child's speech development was not developing properly, but yet the child was developing advanced climbing and swinging skills.
I wonder why.
Because there was no flat area to walk on. So it occurred to me that they have actually reversed evolution.
That's right.
They
it's a
managed
primate.
To
they
turn their child back into a primate. The child walked direct at 4 and is now dragging knuckles at 5 because they can't
so
throw anything
sad.
Away.
Wow.
So.
Well, they end up with this little, and I didn't watch the whole episode. It was just too, I really felt like I had to take a shower.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
At that
yeah,
point.
It's invasive,
and,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You want, you want the Karen Silkwood scrub after that. You don't want to. Yeah, you must get through
but
the airlock.
But the daughter said, okay, I'm organizing something. I'm having somebody come over. There are people coming over. They're going to take all of this out. We're going to start anew.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom reluctantly acquiesced to this. And when that happened, they got to the point where you could see the horror on the mother's face now of these things being taken out of her home and put in piles for takeaway purposes. And they had an argument on the show about 4 boxes, one that fit into the other, which was the magic of these boxes for
nesting
the mother.
Boxes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, right.
Russian nesting
and
boxes.
And that she had a conniption
like
throw.
A panic
she
attack.
She could not. Yeah, she couldn't let that go. And the daughter said, I'm taking it back. It was one of those struggles. And
well, they say it's because the things define the people after a while. And so they can't deal. They don't know who they are.
That's
right.
Their identity.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
But terribly sad. And as I said to Paul and I were talking about it earlier in a meeting today, and I said, is this really what where reality television is going? I mean, and who's watching this?
You are.
You.
Well, but I watched it by accident, truly, and I can't imagine sitting there for a half hour or an hour, whatever it is, and watching it.
Truly? Are you not going to tune in next time?
No.
You gotta be careful.
He's gonna DVR it.
You have to be.
Skip through those.
You gotta be careful flipping through those channels though, because with the Discovery and the History Channel and the medical channels, you stumble across a birth without even realizing it. You
mm-hmm.
stumble across, you know, and it's just like it's very jarring.
Yeah, reality for me is American Idol. That's about my reach there and Celebrity Apprentice. I mean, it's
right.
And that's not even that's like synthetic reality.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the ironic thing about it is that the minute the camera goes on, all realism goes out the window.
Unless you're watching Parking Wars.
Yeah.
which is...
Well, and I have a client that I represented for 27 years, Scott Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
The great Olympic skater. Champion.
Yeah, of course.
Very nice
and,
man.
Yes, lovely man, and father of two, beautiful wife, and just you know, the perfect family. And he's the nicest man on the planet. And they approached him about a reality show last year because he was making his comeback to skating last year.
Oh, wow.
And
really?
At his annual cancer fundraising event that we do every year in Cleveland, and we raise $1 million in one night, and we have you know big major names come in as the mm-hmm. guest stars and the Pops Orchestra and the
oh,
best
wow.
skating stars on the ice. Mm. So the comeback took about 3 months of training. They're following him around, and it was the Learning Channel.
Was it?
I'm going to say it out loud.
Better than a college education.
There you go. And they said to him at one point, after getting so much footage, okay, now we need the arguments
oh, yeah.
between you and your wife.
Yes. Right.
And the screaming fits with the children.
Oh, yeah.
We need to add in the drama. Now we need to heighten everything. He said, excuse me, that's not who I am. We don't live like that.
Yeah.
And long story short, that they said, it's either that or we're pulling the plug. And that's, he said, good for him
that he stood up
yeah,
for himself.
Yeah, really.
I'll pull it for you.
Too nice for reality TV.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
all right, our first guest, no stranger to theater, film, or television. He's been capturing our attention ever since his debut in the 1984 motion picture Revenge of the Nerds. Classic.
Oh, give me a break.
Hey, that's yeah. what we got. Hey, you.
No, wait, no, it was Revenge of the Nerd, not Nerds.
Oh.
Just so you know, that's a different thing.
Oh,
Revenge
really?
Of the Nerd, yeah, yeah.
Revenge
yeah,
of the Nerd.
The Nerd was an after-school special.
So oh, really?
I defy you to see
oh.
that.
Oh, no, yeah. I'll see it. Are you kidding? We're going to play the audio next week. Also, guest starred countless episodic television shows, more recently as Vampire, and do the name for me, Vampire...
Alucard.
Alucard
which is
Van
Dracula Huesen. Spelled backwards. Very
Alucard.
Clever.
Oh,
Van Huesen.
On Disney's hit television series, The Wizards of Waverly Place, which also has a friend of mine named Bill Cott, who is on that show.
Uh-huh.
Please welcome Mr. J.D. Cullen.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. Please, thank you.
You were... I'm sorry I got the nerd thing wrong. I work with what I get, you know. So, Antaeus.
Yes, Antaeus.
You are one of the... Antaeus.
Mm,
you are one of the formative... Are you a founding member of that company?
Close. I started in 1992. The company started in 91, so just about.
Oh, but then it was called Antaeus of the Nerd.
That
time.
Singular. That's right.
Yes. And the production that's coming up there, Malcontent.
Yes.
And
it's we say, what by what? Let's see. What by whom? That's what we call it.
What?
No one's heard of it, and no one's heard of the author.
So of course, it's number one to produce.
Yes, it's definitely a gold mine.
Now, interesting, though, you mentioned, before we came on the air, you mentioned that it's one of those, and there are a lot of plays that fall in this category, Kvetch, what Seaglass is hoping to do in the fall. My company's looking to do this play called Kvetch, which is a perfect example of a play that's meant to be seen
mm-hmm.
rather than read.
Yes.
Now, why does Malcontent fall into that category?
Well, Malcontent was written in about 1604, and it's the Jacobean period of theater, and so it's very complex language. It's as if these guys were trying to outdo Shakespeare. They were trying to out-Shakespeare.
Okay.
Which I'm not sure they succeeded in doing, but they really went crazy with the language, and so when you read it, it's almost unintelligible. But when you start speaking it, when you get actors to do it, it comes alive, and it's actually a lot of fun.
Okay, so there's a musicality to it spoken that you can't
very
really
much.
Get.
Very much. Very challenging verbally, but
okay.
If you get it, then it's very entertaining.
Did you see in the press release, Michael, some words jump out? I mean, I love to see things that say shocking, funny, and filthy all in one
yes.
line.
Yes.
Now, why?
Body.
Body?
You wouldn't believe it. I mean, no bodily function is unmentioned in this. I
really?
Can't believe how shocking and scurrilous this material is.
Is it like commedia? Like the...
There are commedia elements to it. There's characters that are very recognizable types. It's a what you would call a revenge play. And it's a comedy. So... well, gosh, should I give it away? No one dies, basically.
No.
But, you know, it's... That's the kind of play it is, yeah.
Okay.
So it's intrigue, and it's lust.
Very, yes. It's... Intrigue, lust, bad behaviors, shocking things are said. You know,
right.
My character is a malcontent, so I get to say anything that I want to people and get to curse them at length, you know, and then become their friends. So...
As one would do. Yeah, exactly.
As one would
do. So bodily functions are exploited too?
Yes. Yeah. We've got ejaculation. We've got peeing. We've got farting. We've got pooping. I mean, it's all there. I don't know.
Something for everything.
Just another night in North Hollywood.
Yeah, we've got bad breath. We've got Sir Oliver Anchovy's stale jerkin. You know, I mean, it's just crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
Things that I can't even say on the internet.
Oh.
Yeah.
even on the internet.
Yeah.
No, but see, this company really needs to be applauded for this, though, because you know, to do something that's this dangerous, that's rarely ever done. That's why you go.
I'm going to bring this company down. Definitely. Yeah, we've done well for 20 years, and it's time, implode. Yeah.
And you guys are in the Deaf West Theater.
Yes, on Lancashire Boulevard,
South of Magnolia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nice night out there. Go to Eclectic Cafe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go up to that intersection. Go
where we're talking about.
Go to Pitfire Pizza.
That's right.
Yes.
Delicious.
Rock out with your Pitfire.
Rock out with your you-know-what-out?
I don't know what that means.
You never heard that term?
No, I have not.
It rhymes. Rock out with your blank out.
JD didn't even get
don't
that.
Don't roll your radio eyes at me when you ask me to say it. You could hear
it's
his
rock
eyes
out with
roll.
Your smock out.
That's what it is. Filthy. Yeah. Where was your mind? Where was your mind? Of course
it was
somewhere else,
and so was JD.
You're a smock plucker. Sometimes
oh,
you
wow.
are.
Oh, boy. We're going to have to separate you two.
I know.
It's heating up.
He's angry with me because I threw the toggles off. See, I'm tripping over my tongue and everything. So I wanted to ask you, too, about, obviously, you said in your promotional material that your father was a great inspiration to you, and obviously so, the great John Cullum.
Mm-hmm.
And is obviously very supportive. Will he be attending the show?
He lives in New York City. He's currently, what is he doing? He's always working on something.
He's always working. Loved him on Damages, by the way.
Yes, I know. Great show, by the way.
That was a great show.
Oh, man, what a trip that thing was. He's too busy. I don't know if I can get him to come out here. So.
Oh, that's a shame.
Really?
I know it's tough. I'm not going to come see him and whatever he's doing. I'm too busy. Forget about
attached.
It. Yeah,
exactly. As they say.
Right.
You know, I must say, and we'll continue to talk about your play here, but I do want to say that I was excited to meet you today because, again, hearkening back to the television. And the amount that I watch is very little, honest to God. And in bed at night, every night, I watch...
Hoarders.
No. I do not.
You really have to finish that sentence. You can't really put the breath
when
there.
When I moved into this is a new
Late
home,
at night, and, when and, I'm in bed, I watch TV. Well, it's a DVD, actually. Sorry to interrupt you.
No. It's when we moved into the house, it's a new home, and the cable people came and they put in all the stuff and did everything in all the rooms. And so from the first night of sleeping in the new house, I turned the TV on because I do that for about 5 minutes before I go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just for that noise.
Put yourself to sleep.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And what was on was Channel 65 in my area, which is the Disney Channel.
Uh-huh.
One of the Disney channels.
Okay.
And on my screen was you.
Yes.
And the Wizards of Waverly Place.
Yes.
With that wonderful actress from another TV series, All About You. It was
Mad About You.
Mad About You.
Yes, I remember that part, but I've forgotten her name. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Played my wife.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny lady.
Yes.
What a funny. The two of you, the characterizations you
yeah.
did, those
yeah,
two
vampires.
Yeah, it was
fun. We had to wear teeth.
Yes.
Which is always interesting. You know, you have to sort of speak around the teeth. So for a classical actor, that's no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I had to wear vampire teeth. So.
But I got so into The Wizards of Waverly Place as a result of you.
That's right,
because we were talking about Bill Cott, and I told you that he was on Wizard, and you were like, I love that show.
Yeah, I do. You know why I love it? Because it's actually good. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kids
it is
are good.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
is well written.
Yep.
That David Henry, he is something
he's fantastic,
else, isn't he?
Yeah.
And little Selena herself,
yeah.
she's
yep.
fantastic.
And even the little kid is amazing. Maybe
yeah.
He's just amazing what
yeah.
he can do.
It's really a sweet, sweet show. More than sweet, it's interesting. So,
I think that.
So thank you.
Thank you. I'm famous among 9 to 12 year olds and you. So thank you.
I'm going to forego the obvious joke there.
Let that pass.
Oh, my.
I will. But I want to get back to this for the. But just so our listeners know how they can attend the Malcontent. It takes place on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 2:30, except Sunday, May 8th, which will be at 5 o'clock p.m. Tickets $30 on Thursdays and Fridays, $34 on Saturdays and Sundays. Gouge those weekend people with $4. Except opening weekend performance, which are $40. And ooh, $75 includes pre and post show receptions.
Yes,
but then you get to meet the cast.
Yes.
JD.
The NTS company is located at 5112 Lancashire. That's inside Deaf West Theater, as we mentioned, in beautiful North Hollywood, California. Free parking is available in the uncovered Citibank lot on Lancashire Boulevard, just south of Ostego Street. Theaters air conditioned and wheelchair accessible. For reservations and information, call 818-506-1983. That's 818-506-1983. Or go to www.antius.org. The spelling on that, ANTAEUS. It's .org, not .com. So be sure to check that out.
Well done. Well spoken.
Well spoken.
And our listeners were just writing like crazy.
Exactly.
As always, all of this information will be available on our website, stateofthearts.la.com. That's stateofthearts.la.com. So we'll have the information up there. People can click through, make it easier for them, so they don't have to write down quickly,
that's
Mr.
Right.
Man.
Yes, that's right. Are you having fun?
I'm having a great time. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's great to discover this play that really is very seldom done and is a real challenge, but... You know, Antius is a classical company, so we're really suited to this kind of material. I don't think anybody else in this area could handle this kind of material. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we're sort of the vanguard, like forging ahead with this thing.
Well, not only that, but you also have a fan base or people that know the company that will go expecting to see...
Oh, the Marston people are going to come out of the woodwork. I'm sure they've been waiting for this. Yeah. It's like the Trekkies. They're going to be the Marstonites.
Can you imagine what those people are like?
Yes, they're, you know, like Renaissance Fair people.
Right.
Yeah. Showing up in their doublets.
Show up holding a badger.
Right.
You know, something
a badger,
like that.
Right.
I don't know why.
Eating a turkey leg.
Exactly.
JD, are you working on anything television-wise that's coming up?
Well, let's see. I just worked on The Event, which was a brief but lucrative experience.
Emphasis on the lucrative.
Yes, I did work on Mad Men, which was a brief but lucrative experience.
Did you work with John?
Yes, I did, actually. And he's a good enough guy, you know.
Yes, he is.
He keeps it kind of lighthearted on the set.
Yeah.
I guess because it's a serious show and there's a lot of cigarette smoke. So they try to, you know,
is keep it actual fun. Cigarettes or do they
No, it's very elaborate what they have to do because it's illegal to smoke in a workplace.
Right.
So they have to get these fake packs of Lucky Strikes made. And then they have to construct each cigarette by hand. It ends up costing about $50 a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And you wouldn't believe how much they have to smoke. I mean, one after another after another.
And what is it, just like a clove herbal thing?
It's a horrible herbal cigarette. I mean, it's just, you know, appalling. It smells like manure. And, I mean, those of us in the theater recognize it immediately because it's like, oh, yeah, the cigarette you have to smoke in the theater.
Yeah.
But...
I did Tony and Tina's wedding, and we used to do a bit in it where we would give a joint to an audience member, and they would go off and smoke it, and I owned the place, and I would go bust them and everything. But we used to make the joints out of tea, because
you
burn regular, like, Pico tea out of the back, it smells exactly like pot.
Oh, wow.
So it was really funny, because the audiences were convinced that they were actually smoking something that they weren't, because the smell is just identical. I don't know, Michael, but, you know,
That's great.
I know you don't know what marijuana smells like.
It would be helpful
like.
To pick up girls, you know, cheaper than
Yes,
weed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Whatever.
Well, I think you should go see this show, Paul.
I will.
I want you to see it.
Yeah. I will. Seriously. I'm working in a production that's going up in June of another classic. We're doing A Flea in Her Ear, over at the Edgemont Art Center.
That's a tough one to pull.
Yes, it is. That's crazy. And that's in the beginning of June, and really looking forward to doing that. But that's brutal.
Yeah, that's
going to be a tough one. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to doing it. So here's to resurrecting the classics.
Absolutely.
Shall we do our arts calendar before we speak to John?
I think so.
Would you like to kick it off, Michael?
I will. Thank you, Paul. The great Hershey Felder is currently on stage at the Pasadena Playhouse now through May 8th in George Gershwin Alone. Felder, an actor, playwright, and Steinway concert artist, incorporates Gershwin's best-known works, such as The Man I Love and Someone to Watch Over Me, through passages and songs from An American in Paris and Porgy and Bess, to a complete performance of Rhapsody in Blue. Mr. Felder brings to life the spirit and talent of the legendary composer and pianist, leading audiences through the fascinating rhythms of George Gershwin's legendary songbook while telling the tale of his tragically short life.
You still have time to lock in your seats for the Center Theater Group's presentation of God of Carnage at the Amundsen Theater downtown Los Angeles. This exclusive engagement, now through May 29th, features the original Tony-nominated Broadway cast, Jeff Daniels, Hope Davis, James Gandolfini, and Marcia Gay Harden, in a side-splitting comedy about two married couples in upscale Brooklyn who meet to sort out a playground fight between their sons. The production truly took New York by storm, smashing all-time box office records and nabbing Tony Award nominations for all four actors, and eventually earning the Tony Award for Best Play, Best Director, and a Best Actress Tony for Marcia Gay Harden. And for more information about the events in our arts calendar, you can visit either stateoftheartsla.com or performingartslive.com, where you can also check out what's happening in Southern California every day of the week.
Nicely done.
God of Carnage.
Yeah, the reviews are through the roof out here, as I'm sure they were.
Yeah, they were huge in New York, of course.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest created and puppeteered the roles of Princeton, the recent college grad, and Rod, the closeted Republican investment banker, in the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Avenue Q. For the roles, he was nominated for the Tony Award for Best Leading Actor in a Musical in 2004. Los Angeles audiences are thrilled to welcome him to our diverse theater scene in John Merron's electrifying Tale of the Temperamentals, presented by the Blank Theater Company at the Second Stage Theater in Hollywood. Please welcome Mr. John Tartaglia.
It's amazing how they do that. I'm fascinated.
Isn't
it? It's like they're scared of you guys.
They are.
We have to stop at the same time.
We don't pay them when they, you know, when they don't stop.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. That's the problem.
Well,
yes.
Then we would all stop at the same time too. I mean, come on.
Occasionally.
Times are hard.
Cookie.
Yeah. So I had the pleasure, Paul and JD, of seeing this man's work in The Temperamentals, which is, when I said electrifying in your intro, man.
Yeah.
What a show this is,
it's
and
a
what a
show.
Prelude to a time in history here in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Which you know about the Stonewall and the whole. Well, you know what? You're probably better well spoken in this area, and give us a little synopsis and our listeners as well of the play itself.
Well, it's kind of an unknown history. I mean, I certainly, you know, as a gay man and also just as someone who I would like to think knows a little bit about history, I was completely unaware of it until I read the play. It's really about kind of this unspoken time here in Los Angeles in the 50s when a man named Harry Hay and four of his friends started this group called the Mattachine Society, and their whole purpose was to start the first, basically, gay rights revolution. And I think the reason it's kind of glossed over is it unfortunately didn't have a very long lifespan. It was also kind of tied to communism and blacklisting, and also there's something much more glamorous about Stonewall in the sense of, you know, drag queens throwing Molotov cocktails. It's probably a little more exciting in the history books than maybe what they did, which really was kind of, speaking of Mad Men, this kind of Mad Men time, and this it was so unspoken. And so it's just been really interesting for me to personally kind of go, wow, not only were these real people, but it was right here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the locations that the play takes place in are right around the corner. So that's really, it's just neat. And the fact that these men really kind of, there's a line at the end of the show when Harry says, you know, these men step up to the plate before there even was a plate, which I think is really true. They really started something that before it really was started. So that's kind of what it focuses on, and it's, I mean,
and it's a love story too at the same time.
Very much so, yeah.
Between the famous Rudy Gernreich.
Right, Rudy Gernreich and Harry Hay, and
yes.
Of course, again, at a time when you didn't even think about having a relationship with another man, it was unspoken of.
Right.
And their kind of pull in creating this movement, and Rudy's wanting to be successful as he was as this great designer, and kind of how it tore them apart. And it's really, we actually had Peggy Moffat come to our opening night, who
really?
Of course was Rudy's muse, and so to, she wore an original garment. It was really, it was exciting.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, the fact that these are real people, there's just, I get really overwhelmed by that.
Well, real people in real places. Michael was, you know, because we read the press material. I read the press material that Michael supplied me with about the temperamentals. I had actually, I'm already on the mailing list, so I'd gotten the postcard from blank.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the point that you made earlier, everyone knows, I mean, not everyone knows Stonewall, but it's the more recognizable story. I think the fact that it was in New York City,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
had, you know, was one of the reasons that more people know about. I was astounded to find out all this took place in Silver Lake.
Yeah, Silver
yeah.
Lake. Mostly
yeah.
Silver Lake.
And
yeah.
Who knew that we had this history here? And mm-hmm. you know, it was just very, very, you know, it sounds fascinating, and especially because it's true. Now, the term temperamental mm-hmm. Was it a covert
thing? It was a code word.
Yeah. It was a code word.
Yeah,
for
if you were temperamental, that meant you were homosexual.
Okay.
And it's very funny because actually these five men were so different too, and had such different, occasionally such different ideas about how to make this happen that they were also temperamental. So it has kind of a double meaning in the show, which is very funny. And I think it's, I think the reason they used the word temperamental was because you probably were more emotional than most because you had so much more to hide and to worry
yeah,
about.
Yeah, right.
You had
yeah.
to be. And it's and the setting for this play, which is one set, and so very, very cleverly designed and very cleverly used by your director, Michael Matthews.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And the lighting, of course, being so
yeah.
brilliant
yeah.
in this. But, you know, in the back alleys, that's the whole feeling of mm-hmm. what you're looking at on stage. And you're working with some pretty stellar actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eric Bergen,
yeah.
Jersey Boys, who is a friend of State of the Arts, and Dennis Christopher, who
mm-hmm.
we all certainly...
I've worked with Dennis, sure.
Yeah.
He's
mm-hmm.
amazing.
From his wonderful film.
Oh, one of my favorite movies, Breaking Away.
Breaking Away.
Absolutely. Yeah. Patrick Scott Lewis, Mark Chunock, am I saying that
Chunock,
correct?
Chunock, I believe, yeah.
Chunock. What a cast, what an ensemble of people to work with.
Yeah, and it's funny because we're very much like the characters. We all come from different elements,
right.
you know. It's funny to kind of put our different styles and our different takes and everything together.
And you are very different. And I must say that you have the fine job of providing some comic relief.
Yes. Which is funny because when I read the script, the way I read Bob, who's the character I play, Bob Hull, I didn't necessarily see it rife with comedic possibilities at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was actually afraid, because I am known as more of a musical theater comedic guy. I thought, well, this is such a serious play, I'm going to have to play him kind of seriously. And I remember at the table read the first time we did it, our director was so great. He's like, oh, no, honey. He's like, this is fun. You can have fun with this role. And so the challenge was actually to make him, because he is a real person.
Right.
And I wanted to stay true to him and do him service, that he was really funny, apparently, and was very out there and very effeminate for the time, mm-hmm. but that he's a real guy, and he's very hurt and a lot of pain. And
and it has gone through a series of relationships that have
yes.
worked out.
Yeah, in a time when again you
exactly
you wanted a relationship, but you really couldn't have it. So the probably easier thing to do, maybe not for your soul, but for the public, was to
mm-hmm.
kind of just fool around.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I love playing him. It's I love going to the theater every night.
Well, I think it's a great history lesson, Paul, you know, for people.
No, it really is. It really is. And it's one that is not, you know, to echo something that John said earlier, I got a very interesting education myself from a gay couple, my friends Phil and Tim, who live in Chicago. And they had a couple of guests over, a couple of other gay men, and the topic just went to sexuality very, very quickly and sexual prowess and all these other things. And after it was all done, it was just Phil and Tim and I there. And I said, you know, why is that so common?
Hmm.
I said, why do gay men talk about that so much more than, my wife and I were there and so much more so than heterosexual people do? And he just looked at me and he said, he goes, I thought you were smarter than that.
Oh.
And I said, what
wow.
is it? And he said, no, you said, you're free to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
See, you're free to talk about it, and you and Monica can walk down the street hand in hand, and
right,
you can kiss
right.
in a restaurant, and
right.
you can do all of these different things. And I was so embarrassed, and I was there was such a sense of shame that I had, because I consider myself to be very open-minded, and that would slip completely past me. It was just like, This is the problem right there. The problem is just that, is the lack of awareness. So
we've had that here in the show rehearsing too. It's been like having to completely relook at your life and go, oh, okay, I'm, you know, in my 30s and an open man, and I've been very lucky to live in the time I live in. And it was so weird to go back and even just gestures, and I'm a very touchy-feely person, to put my hand on someone's shoulder. Oh, you can't do that. Right. All these things that you don't realize, that especially at that time.
Oh, to say, to stay true to the time period that the play is in. Yeah.
And it was a huge re-changing of the way I looked at things, because I was like, oh, yeah, I guess, right, you couldn't do that. Oh, you couldn't say that. You couldn't look like that. You couldn't make that smirk. You couldn't. It's really.
Right.
Were there kind of codes, you know, between men when it was like you could decipher, like, okay, this guy's also gay?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was, from what I understand, I mean, I'd like to think I know a little more, but Lord knows I'm not an expert. But yeah, there were like little words that were used and hints that were dropped. And one thing that I thought was really interesting was my character actually gives a ring back to one of the guys he dates. And I asked, I was like, did they exchange rings? And it was like, yeah, because of course no one could decipher if it was from a man or a woman. You had a ring. Mm-hmm. So there were little things that like you could, like secrets that you had. It was a lot of secrets.
Yeah, and just the stress, you know, talk about the temperamentals, just the stress that you would retain in you just physically from having to live that secret life all the time. It'd be a hell of a lot more temperamental if it was me. I'd be, you know, ready to jump off something high.
Yeah.
I mean, just the anxiety.
Exactly. Well, you know, I saw something on television recently on one of the crime shows, and I think this is kind of their MO, another series that
you watch a lot of television.
You do. You're lying. You say it's 5 minutes, but I don't know.
Okay. In short, there was this gay horse, and he had a dead gay cat.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We did that on Wizards of Waverly Place.
That's all ties in, doesn't it?
A very special episode.
Yeah. Now, this was a crime scene investigation, CSI, or it was something that, and it was a flashback to this time period that you're talking about, and it was about the death of a young gay man who was a brilliant baseball player and raised by his family to be just that, and the standout citizen and so forth. And but he was living in the dark shadows, and when he went into a gay establishment, it was full of men and women. Mm-hmm. And the reason the women were there was to really save the guys, because if the bartender or management got word that the police were on the prowess here, a red light would be set up on the bar, like, you know, like the top of a police car would use.
Right.
And it would go off, giving everyone the silent signal that trouble was ahead, and everyone then switched out of, like, if two men were dancing, suddenly they would be with a woman, and the whole place transformed into being a straight...
And they do just pair up for appearances.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And they actually had to go to that extent.
Yeah, you'd be arrested. I mean, that was one of the other things that blew my mind, was you couldn't, if you were on a street corner and it looked like in any way, shape, or form you were suggestive with somebody of the same sex, you could be arrested right then and there.
Or morals charge or something?
Yeah. I think they call it vague lewd. Acts of lewdness in public or something like that.
God.
So it's, and which is actually part of the trial of the show, is that it's kind of based around someone who completely falsely gets in trouble for that. And and these men actually, instead of just admitting, you know, going along with it, saying, yeah, they kind of said, nope, he's gay and this is why it happened. And they won. It's really interesting. It's such a...
Well, let me ask you something audience-wise. I know that you haven't done that many performances. You've done some preview performances. Mm-hmm. You just opened on the 16th. With the audience, when I was there for the press opening, it was an adult audience. Mm-hmm. But I hope that you will attract a younger audience as well.
It's been a great mix. I mean, it's been definitely, you know, a lot of...
Because I think they really need to know about all this.
Yeah, actually, one of the nicest things in our preview period especially was looking out and seeing so many men and women actually in their 20s and 30s. And emotionally involved. That was exciting to me, because I will admit, I certainly never would have, you know, maybe sought this kind of thing out had I not known more about it, which I do now. And I think it is important for people to see it. What I'm really happy about is that we knew we'd get a great gay audience, because obviously the subject matter, what we've had is an incredible amount of straight audience who are fascinated by this. A, because of the historical reasons here in LA, but also because they're like, we never even knew this existed, you know. Wow. And it's, on top of that, just a great play. I mean, I don't think it's not. There's nothing in it that if you're not gay, you're going to be lost or something.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Right. It's not like it's a dry history lesson. It's a very fertile play. Yeah.
Right. So it's, and it's a love story. I think ultimately people, anyone can relate to
A very
to that.
Intense one.
Yeah.
I might add.
Yeah.
I might add.
Well, before we forget, I want to get the information out there so that we know how, so we can send people to it. This is presented by the Blank Theater Company. It opens opened April 16th, plays Thursday through Saturday at 8, Sundays at 2 through May 22nd. And that's at the Second Stage Theater. The Blank Theater does wonderful work. They have their wonderful young playwrights.
Yes, they do, which is coming up, actually.
The Second Stage here, 6500 Santa Monica Boulevard in Hollywood. That's 323-661-9827 for tickets. 323-661-9827. Or www.theblank.com. That's theblank.com. So we just want to make sure. We know, not that we have to stop talking about it. I just wanted to make sure that we got that information out there.
Thank you, Paul, for that. And you know what I wanted to ask, if I may, John?
Yes.
I wanted to ask about this lovely article that that Ken Werther, my friend, your publicist for this show, sent to me to read. And it was written for LA Stage Alliance, and it was kind of your take on the experience of coming out here from New York, and what your friend said to you in New York about coming out to Los Angeles to do a play.
Yes.
So elaborate on that, will you?
Well, you know, I'm blessed that I work so much in New York, and I love New York. It's where I live. And when I got the call to come and do the Temperamentals out here, I was really excited about it, and I love Los Angeles. I've always wanted to be out here, and I love the idea of doing this show because it is so different from what I usually do. And it was so funny seeing the reaction of so many of my friends who are actors in New York. It's like, you know, when I said I was going to do a play in Los Angeles, it was like I was telling them I was going to go become a stripper. They were like, what?
What?
Los Angeles? You know,
what?
Like I had three heads, and I didn't understand that. And finally, you know, a couple of them were like, well, congratulations, but you know, like as if like I was, you know, really like so sorry.
Right.
But like, congratulations, but you know, no one goes to Los Angeles to do theater, and it kind of fascinated me because I was like, why? And first of all, I loved being out here every second of it. And the more I talk to people, it's funny. It's like everyone thinks of L.A. as just TV and film. And, of course, everyone thinks of New York as Broadway. And that's the way it's always been. And I kind of started to go, well, why? You know, and I'm fascinated by that because I don't see any reason why Los Angeles can't be also a theater mecca. And ironically, there are more theaters out here than there probably are in the whole of Broadway. And so it's so funny to me that's not more taken advantage of. So I'm kind of the, I've been converted now, and I'm kind of like, listen, you know, it's a beautiful city. It's actually an incredible theater community.
Yeah, very much so.
That is just unknown. In fact, we talked about this the other night, Michael, when you came to see the show, that
yes.
it's almost like people just don't know where to go to absorb it and to find out about it. So I hope that more and more of it's done out here.
I mean, I think what your friend said to you, I might have applied to Los Angeles Theater maybe 20 years ago, but I think in that time period, companies like your own, companies like The Blank, they're, when I said your own, ladies and gentlemen, to JD's company, the Antius.
Yes, well said.
Thank you. But and Paul is also the the managing director of Seaglass Theater, which has done some brilliant work out here in the past couple of years.
And I think that it's and what you said, John, and I appreciate you writing the piece for LA Stage Alliance and being honest about that mindset, because that's a very common mindset. And I think that the reason that exists, one of the reasons that exists, is that the deficiency in Los Angeles theater, if there is one, because I think Chicago is also a great theater town that's
absolutely
often overlooked, is that there are so many people, there's a lot of people in New York too, but there's so many people that receive their training out here from film and television workshops that there's a learning curve to stage performing. And there's a lot of theater that goes on in Los Angeles with actors who are trained primarily for film and television.
Yeah.
You know, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah,
so we are up against a lot of that type of theater. Because the other thing, too, is that unlike Chicago and unlike New York, it's harder to sell the evening out here because you have to drive everywhere.
Absolutely.
You can't meet in a restaurant.
Absolutely.
You can't grab a cab.
Yeah.
You can't go and do this.
Well, and so many of the theaters aren't also in an area that necessarily supports it.
No, we're nine suburbs all mushed together.
Right.
There's no real heart. Is that, you know, this year downtown will be the heart, and next year Hollywood will be the heart, and then North Hollywood will be the heart of the theatrical
sure.
community. So these are just things that are dictated by geography, but I think let's continue to dispel that myth.
Oh, I hope so. I'm glad to be part of that.
Indeed. Good. Well, gentlemen, it's come to that time in the show.
Pantsless Monday?
It's Pantsless Monday.
Oh, great.
Hey.
Done.
Wait, I'm already wearing no pants, so should I put them on?
Uh-oh. Wait, would you say that again, Michael? Would you say it's Pantsless Monday?
It's Pantsless Monday.
Okay.
Oh,
yes. Nice.
Only the first.
We take this, at this point in the program, we take this time to initiate each of you.
Oh, God.
And did you tell them?
I did tell them.
Okay.
Your nightmare theater story, the most embarrassing thing to happen to you on stage, most catastrophic if you have one. You know, something on the floor has become very interesting for JD because the eyes just went down. So I think we're starting with
John. Do you need more time?
I need more time.
Well, you know, there's been many, but the one that always sticks out in my head was we just opened an Avenue Q on Broadway, and the blackout of New York City happened. That summer. And, you know, which, if you didn't know what happened, it was a 3-day blackout. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. 3-day blackout. It was pretty
There's
bad.
A great satellite photo that just shows the whole chunk
Really?
Of it where it's pitch black.
Wow. I'd love to see that. Yeah, it was pretty bad. And, you know, of course, they canceled almost every single show in town. It was also deathly hot. So, you know, no one wanted to sit in a theater. So all the theaters didn't have their air conditioning on. And Avenue Q shut down. And I think 2 days later, we came back. And they said we're gonna go on with the show. Well, what no one had thought about was that most theaters, what's the worst that happens? You know, the costumes get overheated, whatever. You put the air conditioner on, it's fine. With puppets, as well made as these puppets are, and they are beautifully made, everything is held together. Not everything, but a lot of things are held together with barge cement, which is shoe cement, which is how shoes, you know, rubber soles.
All right.
And the only thing that can deactivate it, I mean, you can pull, you can tear, it won't come off. The only thing that will deactivate it is heat. So no one thought about this. And our fantastic puppet wrangler came in, checked the puppets, everything seemed fine. And long and short of it is, we were doing Loud as the Hell You Want, our night back, which is the song where Princeton and Kate, shall we say, make sweet, sweet love to a big song. And it's a very physically violent number. And Stephanie DeBruzzo and I, who's my co-star, we're doing this part where our puppets are kind of twirling around in the bed. And all of a sudden I see something white kind of zing by my face. And I'm like, oh, that was weird. I wonder what that was. And I look down, and luckily, I'm still in dark. I see that one of my puppet's eyes has fallen off. Princeton's eyes has completely fallen off. Which, by the way, I'd like to say probably, with the exception maybe like the Lion King, probably no one else will ever be able to tell the story again. And so I'm like, oh, wow. And so I play the rest of the scene with him profile so that his other face was looking, you know, his other eye was looking off stage, which really probably looked really disturbing to the audience because not only is this puppet having sex in a bed on Broadway, but he's also looking away from the other characters, talking into the wings. It was like, you know, of course, and Stephanie and I are both tears going down our face, giggling, and Natalie, who plays Gary Coleman, who also is an easy breaker, she laughs at anything like I do. When she realized what was going on, she starts losing it. She has to sing the whole song. I mean, it was just like one of those moments where it was such a electrifying, wonderful moment on stage, and yet completely horrifying at the same time. And I think like the next, you know, 20 minutes on stage were people looking around like for the eye on stage, you know, making it. So it was
There was no "I'll keep an eye out for you" joke.
Oh, God,
that's good.
Right.
Wow.
That was good.
Was the audience in tune with what was going on?
I think maybe the people in the first row or two were, because they must have seen it. I mean, it's this huge, you know, 3-inch white eye flying off of something. But I don't think the rest of the audience was. But you know, I'm sure they were kind of like, these people are unprofessional. They're laughing at everything.
I got to tell you though, John, it was hysterical what you said. I turned him a profile, which of course looked very odd. Yeah, that's the thing that's odd.
Right,
that two puppets are having sex
with
on
no
stage.
Lower appendages.
With no lower appendages. Yeah. That's not the odd part.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you turned profile.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, you can tell you where I'm coming from. That's the thing I worry about.
Right. But, right.
So I think that's probably it.
JD, what do you got?
Oh God. Well, mine is more basic and horrible. I guess I have to preface this by saying that I'd eaten an enormous dinner. Okay.
Already good.
Where this is going.
So I'm in this play at South Coast Repertory called Making It, and it was actually one of the last plays they did in their little intimate space where the audience is right there.
Yay.
And it's a scene where my wife and I are sitting at a dinner table, and it's her birthday, and she sings this I give her a gift, and then she sings this beautiful song, and then there's a long pause, and I say, You're lovely. Okay, so that night she sings the beautiful song, You're Lovely.
Oh, God. No.
And there was no mistaking. There was just no... It was so appalling. And, you know, the laughter was there. Everyone in the room heard it. The other actors actually had to be in a freeze on stage. Yeah. And they were all shaking. Yes. Everyone was shaking. It was... just the worst.
Wow.
Never heard the end of it.
There's no way you can't get by that.
There's no way around it.
No.
Yeah, no matter how classy you are.
Yeah.
Yes. If it happens,
yeah.
It happens.
Did you laugh when you said you're lovely? There had to be a party that was giggling a little bit.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
No, I was horrified. I'm sure I turned just bright red. And for the rest of the show, I mean, I was thrown off. I should have just owned it.
Because
my character was kind of a jerk anyway. So I just, you're lovely. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, hon.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? But I just didn't have the press. So if and when it happens again, and it probably
will. Yeah.
I'll know what to do.
Yeah.
I'm well equipped for that.
That's amazing.
That's right up there with Scott Lowell's peeing in the cardboard box.
That's right. Scott Lowell.
Wow.
You'll have to listen to the Scott Lowell
episode. That's something to aim for.
Well, one more time, ladies and gentlemen, you can see...
They said you were a fool to dream.
You can see John Tartaglia in The Temperamentals, presented by the Blank Theater Company through May 22nd. Simply call 323-661-9827 for tickets or visit the organization, the theater company, The Blank, at their website, theblank.com. And for Mr. Cullum, you can see his wonderful show at Antius.
Nice try.
Antius. You see, you made me nervous, JD. You looked over here right as I was going to say that.
Antius.
There you go. Yeah. And that is opening very soon, and it will run through the May...
June 19th, probably. Possible extension to the 26th.
Opens on the 8th of May. Is that correct?
It opens the week of May 4th.
May 4th. I'm just wrong all over the place. Forgive me. But for tickets, ladies and gentlemen, and reservations, please call 818-506-1983 or go to their website, antaeus.org.
And please join us again next week when our guest will be Allie Willis, one of pop and Broadway's most prolific and celebrated award-winning composers.
You can say that again, Paul. Allie has written such mega hit songs as Earth, Wind, and Fire, September, Boogie Woogie Wonderland, Neutron Dance, I'll Be There for You, the theme song from the hit TV series Friends, and Broadway's timeless musical, The Color Purple.
We have to go. Thank you to both our guests. We will see you next week.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.